That's one of the songs that kept popping up in my head when I was reading The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective. As somebody like Robert Cracknell has discovered, there is something unique about his brain, which while we all may have some psychic abilities, his mind screams out information which is helpful to the police in a kind of mental cat and mouse game with criminals who are otherwise going to get away with murder. We'll talk about the life of a psychic detective and the major cases he has helped to crack coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. You can hook up to Robert Cracknell in his book, The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective at coasttocoastam.com. Good evening, Robert.
Hi. Good morning from here.
It's morning somewhere, everywhere, somewhere right now. I want to tell a story about your book before you tell us more about your life vis-a-vis your book, okay?
Okay, so, fine.
So a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, is when this book came to me for a quick review just to see if I wanted to do the interview or not, right? So I read the first chapter, thought, okay, without a doubt, this is going to be really interesting. Great. And I put it aside in the stack of books to be read on my porch. So I kind of use my porch a little bit as sort of an office, and especially in the summer months. And so I had a stack of books there that I was reading through for Coast to Coast. And I knew your book was in there. So yesterday I went to go read some more of the chapters yesterday afternoon. I usually prep about 24 hours before the show. And I went and I was like, gosh darn it, where's that book? And I went downstairs and I went through the stack of books. There was only about 10 of them on my table on the porch. Wasn't there. So I told my wife, I said, I know the boys were cleaning and stuff. Could they have moved this book I was looking for? We went looking for it on a couple other shelves. Couldn't find it. So she said, you know what? I'll find it for you. I'll look. I'm going to do a cleaning in this other room. Maybe it got put in there. I said, that's great. So again, I went once more this morning, gotten up bright and early going, I got to find this book because I want to read as much as I can of it. I might even be able to read the whole thing if I sat down today. And I went and I kept looking for it. She went looking for it again. Nothing. 1 o'clock this afternoon, I'm going out to the porch. And the same stack of books we have both been through twice. On top of that stack of books is this book. We have no idea how the book got there. It was really freaky. We both looked at that stack. I went through author, but kept read every author's name, and it wasn't there. So I had this very sort of spooky kind of ghosty kind of, you know, psychic feeling as the book was right there on top of the stack of books I'd already searched through three times. And I thought, okay, that's a weird way to sit down and start to read your life story.
Uh-huh.
Maybe not so surprising for a guy like you, who, since you were a kid, you've often had these sort of weird psychic moments that you had to process.
Well, yes. I suppose also it's natural for you to say weird. As a child, I didn't really consider it weird. It was some form of naturalness. It compensated a great deal for my own loneliness as a child, but it wasn't weird.
Well, there are a couple of times as you tell your story where you add to, I mean, the story of the old lady that was in your room. I mean, you knew what you were asking when you got your mother and your stepfather involved in something like that. I mean, right? Yeah. I mean, that wasn't, you knew that it was an odd thing to come into your mother's room to say.
Well, it was. And I suppose that afterwards, I felt a great deal of guilt that I had shown this tremendous weakness. 21 years of age, nearly, and going into your parents' room and saying, hey, I'm scared.
Yeah. Tell the story of what happened. You had already had some other experiences that let you know that there was something about the way you were processing information that you understood more than what was on the table in front of you. You had a sense about somebody's life or their private pain, or in the case of that teacher that hadn't that had been hard on you, and you had this sense that there was something wrong with her, and so you had this ability early on. But I think this is this experience in your room when you went back to visit your mother when you said you were 21 when you went back, and what happened?
I was coming up to that point, you know. It had all began to happen. I was in the Air Force, and I had kind of made it my career. I had been joined at the age of 15, and it was on guard duty one night that I had my first, what I now know to be, out-of-body experience. But unfortunately, I was kind of grabbing a couple of hours' sleep before I went to change the guard again. And the door opened, and this runner stood there, and he said, "Quick, Corporal, hurry up, the orderly officer's here." I tried to get off the bed and realized I was totally paralyzed. I could not move. And I just sheer panic. And then I seemed to black out. I was woken then by a knock on the door, and the runner stood there. He said, "Corp, the orderly officer's walked in." And I was absolutely reeling. I had to present myself to the orderly officer. "Yes, my things are fine." And I was shocked. After the guard duty, I had 24 hours off. I went straight to the MO, convinced that I'd got some form of brain tumor or something that had happened that was called it paralysis. And this happened two or three times. I was then able to get some leave, and I came home to my mother's home at the time. And the whole thing, I was buzzing. I really couldn't settle at all with this experience. I lay in the room, and it was almost electric. It was alive. Things were happening. And it was beyond my comprehension now. I'd never experienced anything so vicious, and I mean vicious. I was being attacked, but I really didn't know what it was about. And in the end, I thought, "I need contact. I need contact. I can't take the darkness anymore." And that's why I went in and literally stood there like a little child. "Mummy, I'm frightened. You know, can I come in your bed?" type thing. They, being basic, down-to-earth people, more or less said, "What's wrong? Come on, everything's okay. Da 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 da." And they came into the room with me. It was then that it suddenly clicked. I said, "There's an old lady here, you know. She's died in this room." And I think that freaked them out totally. And we had a cup of tea at the end of the session, and I drifted off to sleep naturally after a while. So that was really vivid. And it triggered my being discharged from the Royal Air Force, because I went back off of leave and I was having more and more of these paralysis attacks. And I had, in the end, to go to the MO and confess all. And unfortunately, doctors at that time, as they are today, are not prepared to listen to some strange out-of-body experiences, you know.
Well, and talk about the out-of-bodiness as opposed to the out-of-body experience of somebody else. And you're saying you experienced the presence of an old lady that was in the room.
Yep.
What was that presence telling you? What were you feeling from it? Your paralysis experiences aside, that the we associate with mediums, for lack of a better word, for psychics, that all the time, that there's that contact with the dead that will be there to tell you something or are reaching out to you because your mind seems to be able to halfway reach out to them.
I know which way you're going. I don't think that the contact was to give me any form of message. I crossed into another area, another dimension, where this aspect of our life, which we call death, is a very real situation. I do not accept that there is any need for communication or messages. But I had stepped into a different zone, and I couldn't handle it. And it's only afterwards that I began to investigate and look at spiritualism and this form of communication, which I very quickly was able to dismiss, and realize that somehow I was able to subconsciously, unconsciously slip into other zones, the best way I can put it at the time.
We're talking with Robert Cracknell, the autobiography of a psychic detective. So at this point in your life, and we will spend a little time, by the way, talking about Robert's life as a way of understanding how he ends up getting into the work of a psychic detective, somebody who is recognized, as Robert is often described, as the best psychic investigator in England. But we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk a little bit more about some of the cases. But you weren't yet doing that, obviously, for a living. You were still trying to understand it. You thought you'd be a career Air Force guy, or at least for the whatever the 12-and-a-half-year term, whatever it was. And that you were ready to make that your life work for a while, and then suddenly you're totally disrupted. These experiences keep coming at you. You can't stop them. So explain how you start to turn that around, recognizing you can't, you might as well go with it, because resisting it is appears to be futile.
Yeah. Well, having been discharged from the Royal Air Force, I was given the opportunity of what they term remustering into another trade group, because I was dealing with explosives and bombs. That was my trade. And they considered that I was had become temperamentally unsuitable for this. So I could have become a corporal in charge of a driving school or something like that, but I chose no, and so I was medically discharged. Totally confused, I really didn't know where I stood, what I was going to do. So I chose for a while to become what we term a dosser. I didn't have to. I chose to live rough. I chose to live with people and look at people and try to understand them. And I was in this situation for a good 6 months. In London, I lived with the down and outs, the Jakeys. The Jakeys were a group of people who drank literally methylated spirits and water.
Yikes.
It was so cheap. They would even boil boot polish, anything to get some form of kick inside them. And I was trying to reach and saying, what has happened to these people? This is not me. It's not. I'm not going to go this route, but I want to know these people. And I began to analyze and realize that I could relate to them without talking, without speaking. I was beginning to feel and understand a total abject misery that they were experiencing, and their constant attempts to escape from it, from alcohol or whatever, was sustaining me in some way. I was learning, and I had so much opportunity to sit on my own quietly and analyze everything, and realize, hey, come on, I'm still asking myself who I am. Who am I? And that was my constant cry, who am I? And as you know from the book, I ended up going voluntarily into a mental hospital to try and come to terms with it, but unfortunately, that didn't do the trick for me. Met a woman who I married eventually, had children, and realized what a terrible mistake that I had made, because I was still absorbing as much information as I could. I was like a sponge. And every time there came a point where I had to squeeze this sponge out to allow it to be refilled again, and still had to face up to the responsibilities of everyday life, wife and children. So this internal conflict had to be resolved. I tried to study the spiritualism. I became involved in it. I became interested in it. My first experience, I walked into a spiritualist church, which I came across, sat in the audience, and to my absolute amazement, the psychic demonstrator on the platform of that church said, "I want to come to that young man." And I kind of thought, hello, here we go. And she said to me, "You are in such turmoil, and you shouldn't be. You have everything. Now you must use it." And it didn't do me any favors. I became even more confused. But that was the beginning. And gradually, I came to terms and was able to relate to everything that had taken place in my life, my childhood, everything. Everything fell into place. I always had this ability. I didn't recognize it, but now I understood it, and that it was my psychic faculty now had completely broken through, and I could embrace it entirely, and I could operate quite freely and happily without any confusion.
Very interesting. And you did say dosser at the beginning and not you became a tosser, right?
No, I said dosser.
Yeah, just want to make sure I understood.
It's a down and out.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Double checking. Okay. So but this is the story of the lonely sense, and you're hearing from Robert already how both as a child, which you had awful. I'm so sorry for what happened to you as a kid. I won't even go into the details, but must have been terribly difficult. And then eventually finding himself and then losing himself after thinking this is the stability the RAF gave you was then taken away, and then you had to kind of rebuild your life. That is tough. But there's something about the lonely sense too, which is obviously a play on the idea that it's an easy thing for you to experience, but it's a hard thing to explain to somebody else.
It is. I'd say that for quite some time, I was quite happy to embrace the spiritualistic philosophy. The communication with the dead always perturbed me. I found myself more inclined, if I'm talking to somebody or when I was demonstrating clairvoyance, etc., I found it far more easy to get to the person themselves and to literally totally analyze the individual, their current situation, their problems. The question of giving them some vague message, oh, your mother is here, your father is here, it's a fair bet if you're talking to someone in the age of 60 or 70 that they've got a parent in what they term spirit. But that didn't do any good. And I wanted the person to know themselves, and I was able to pinpoint and turn it around. And these people were coming to me, and I was devoting more time to them than to my responsibilities as a parent. And it was my first wife who turned around and one day and said, "It's no good. I want a man, not a psychic." So that was the end of the marriage.
Well, and yet it's the beginning of a career as a psychic detective. We'll talk about the cases of Robert Cracknell coming up in just a minute. What was the first crime that he got involved in solving? What has it led to? What are some of the most what are some of the biggest long shots he's called? And I say that in the sense that where police had already given up, and yet he said that one thing which changed everything. It was a paradigm shifter for the investigation. We'll get into all of that coming up on Coast to Coast. And I'll ask him about next week, too, about next week being the supposed rapture. And whether he has a vibe at all about that. Maybe he'll talk a little bit about his religious experience as a kid, too. That's interesting. On the way next, on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So, Robert Cracknell, The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective. You can link him to him through coasttocoastam.com. And we have, by the way, also a new Facebook page where I hope if you go online, if you go to the Coast to Coast AM Facebook page, you can both answer questions and participate in ongoing surveys during the show and about future shows, too, on Coast to Coast. So, Robert, we've established a little bit about your kind of the lonely upbringing, which led you to these different places that you nobody would have predicted they would have ended up. But here you are with this psychic ability, which you are beginning to be able to control and or at least to be able to anticipate now, and you're comfortable with it. You come to peace with it. Before we get into a little bit more about the kind of your first cases and some of the other things that come up in your life, talk to me about the mechanism as best as you understand it. Why do you think you can pick up vibrations from objects that tell you about the person that last held it or the person to which that object is connected? Why do you think you're able to look into the future?
First and foremost, let me state categorically that I do not consider that I am unique or that I have any special gift whatsoever. I maintain that we all have this latent ability within us. It is part of us. It is the sixth sense. It is belonging to everyone. I think the circumstances that bring it out are more important, and those people who are listening and themselves are beginning to experience psychic stirrings, for example. It normally takes some emotional kick to bring it into play. It's extremely difficult to explain. Going through an emotional period tends to make you go into this strange zone. So the mechanics is something that I find extremely difficult to explain. I am always prepared to say, I know what I can do. I don't know what I can't do. So therefore, I am prepared to put myself on the line in terms of experiments, which I have taken place in, on the hope that those who are witnessing or observing are able to place labels on it. They are able to look at it and say, yes, this is not normal, and yet it is part of a normal sense. And it's up to the scientists, and I implore all psychics now to put themselves on the line and let the scientist investigate this natural ability which is within each and every one of us. You take the more primitive society, you take the Aboriginal race in Australia, they are so close and tuned into nature. America, you have your own history of the American Red Indian. They were close to nature. They were in tune. And unfortunately, now we've come into the harsh realities of modern-day living. And it's creating such a cacophony of vibrations and almost white noise that it's extremely difficult to break into it. You have to, now for me, I have to prepare myself. I'm working on something, or somebody has come to see me, and we're discussing it. I have to tune in and relax, close down the part of my mind that is, if you like, to the fore. Close down that and just accept, okay, now we're in this area. I wrote a book once called The Psychic Wilderness. And the psychic wilderness, I try to relate as being simply that, a wilderness. You have to clear it. You have to clear all the dross and garbage and preconceived ideas to be able to function within that. So the mechanics of my ability and everyone else's has to be defined clearly, not by the individual, but by the observer or the witnesses. Not to say, wow, that's incredible, that's fantastic, but to realize that it is an important aspect of the human psyche that is really not been fully understood.
Well,
and
okay.
Yet we know that, I beg your pardon.
Well, but at the same time, I realize you're, and I think that's a totally fair answer to say everybody has it. Although I will tell you, I'll just tell you candidly, that's a bit of a dodge. And I only say that not because I doubt your ability, it's just because I doubt mine. And I think it's one of those things which psychics say because it allows them to not answer the question. And I think it's a tough question, no doubt, and a dodge comes in handy now and again. But for you to say that I have this ability somewhere innately inside of me, it's like saying if I were to ask somebody, you know, what makes you such a great singer, and their answer to that is, I believe everybody is an opera singer, everybody can sing opera. Well, no, they can't. You know, it just really comes down to it is most people can't sing opera, even the best singers in the world. A majority of them can't sing opera.
I can't sing opera.
Right. So that's what you're telling me in a way, is I could sing opera if I really put my mind to it, and I can't. So I lack whatever the vocal cord construction is, whatever that great genetic gift is, I wasn't given that. So you've got something that I don't have, presumably, because I touch objects all the time, and I don't have the experiences that you have, and I'm totally open to having them, and I don't have them.
I take your point completely.
Good.
But let me try to give you, if you like, a simple demonstration as to how you and everybody else, without realizing, do act upon their psychic intuition. Take A for example, and I'm sure every one of your listeners can relate to this. You've been invited to dinner, some friends. You know these friends quite well. And you've been invited to dinner, okay? Well, let's create a scenario. You go to the house, boom, 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 knock on the door. Lady comes down, hi, sorry, everything's gone wrong, bit late. John's in the shower, look, I'll be 2 minutes. Here, come on, sit down, grab yourself a drink. The drinks are over there. I promise, 2 minutes and be with you. Okay, lots of love, bum. And you are left sitting in this room with your partner, whoever, and you suddenly realize something isn't right. You can't put your finger on it, but you know that probably 10 minutes before you came and walked in, there has been one blazing row.
Yeah, big fight.
Yeah. There's been a blazing row, but you can't define it clearly. You just feel the discomfort. Okay, within a few minutes, in come your hosts, and immediately you begin to relax. But you know, and you've probably looked at your partner and flashed across, hang on, they've had a right Barney here. Okay, you accept that. Yes?
I do, although I have to say, if it were me, I'm always torn. Did they just have a big fight before we came over, or was it a pre-dinner party sex romp? So there, okay. I've never... Either way, you're picking up some sort of vibe, right?
Okay, now then, let's take that point.
Okay.
Now, if I, or a psychic that is fully aware of their ability was there, their discomfort, they would immediately think, hang on, what's going on? Let's relax, let's analyze it. And you would determine, no, it wasn't a sex romp, it was an argument, and even some indication as to what that might be. Now, because it's only recently happened, the vibrations are still there. They're lingering, and they're slowly dissipating. Reverse that situation to that room being a murder scene. Okay? This is the psychic ability working.
Right.
You go into the murder room. The violence, the distress, the anxiety, every feeling that went through the victim and went through the perpetrator, it is so violent, it is so strong, it can't dissipate within a very short period of time. In fact, as we talk about situations, talk about hauntings and ghosts, you know, violence is still there. It's swirling around, and within this maelstrom of vibrations, the police and the psychic have to try to get to the root cause of it. Imagine a simple stream, perfectly still. You can look through the stream, and you can see at the bottom all the pebbles, all the pond life, etc., etc. Drop a pebble into that, and it creates ripples.
Right.
It distorts the true image at the bottom. You understand?
Sure. Oh, totally.
It distorts it. Because it's a small pebble, it soon settles back to its normal, placid state. If, however, you were to throw a damn great boulder into it, not only would it cause ripples, it would splash and swirl. So that's where the psychic has to wait or help these waves to settle down so that they can see the existence of the bottom clearly, whereas the disturbance has distorted it. And you can't pick out any individual feature until that pond is once again still.
I think that's
that helps.
I think you're the first analogy about being able to detect residual energy, where you had no evidence of something. I mean, there was nothing other than just the couple was running late, but suddenly you just get a feeling, and that you, as you process that feeling, you get the sense that this couple had had a big fight. And so you get sort of you pick up on the negative energy. But I think that's the difference between you and then me, or you and just about everybody else on the planet, or you wouldn't seem so exceptional, is that I might be able to pick up those vibrations that you experience,
yep,
you know, about the couple. But I don't feel that kind of residual energy in inanimate objects. And that's where I think that's what's so interesting. And I know that in part of The Lonely Sense, you even differentiate between an object that was once held by the victim, that was like the last thing that they held in their hand, for example, and an object which was held by them or associated by them sometime in the past, where they may never have actually held the object, but it was just something that they owned. And that either way, you can get those things. So that's, I think that's the difference. That would be like saying, to use your analogy, that you knew the couple had had a fight when you turned off the highway, and before you'd even gone down their street, you knew, they've had a fight. They're going to be late for dinner. We're going to be sitting in the front room having a drink, making uncomfortable conversation, trying to figure out what they were fighting about.
Okay.
I think that's the difference.
Okay, but then again, the whole interesting thing about this psychic ability is that you cannot predict what you are going to experience.
Well, there you go.
It suddenly happens. You can't predict it. And so that's why I would disagree that I'm driving to the house and that I've already, I mean, yes, it can happen, but extremely unlikely. It's only when you walk into that atmosphere.
Okay.
Then
you get
me?
Yeah, I am.
You walk into the atmosphere and there you go, boom, they've had a fight. They've had an argument.
So knowing what we just... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
No, I didn't know there'd be an and. I was okay. I was anxious to get to take that into the next issue, which is then how do you take that experience? How does that inform your first case when you discovered not only that you were getting these flashes, but you could actually use it to help solve crimes?
Yeah. Well, this came about, I was being interviewed for a magazine in England by a journalist, and he was going through the normal routine questions. And he suddenly said to me, do you get any feelings about this young woman that was found murdered in the Mini, this Australian backpacker? She had a little red Mini and she was found murdered in Wheat Hampstead. I said, yes, I've read about it. He said, have you got any feelings about it? And instantly, zoom, I can't explain it. I mean, bearing in mind that I had deliberately set out, I had studied meditation, I had experienced the silence. Part of my program is to have a day's silence once a week. And within that silence, you have the opportunity to get rid of all the dross of yourself and go and face the pond and see it. But instantly I said, yep, but, and this is the one thing that perhaps I shouldn't have said. I've been criticized for it. I said, this woman was not, as portrayed in the newspaper, innocent. They say that she was not sexually active. But no, there's something wrong here. He said, what do you mean? I said, because quite clearly, I can see on the back seat of this Mini car a UID coil, a birth control device. I said, the rape was so savage. She was raped before she was murdered. It was so savage that it dislodged this coil. And I can see it clearly there. He said, oh, okay, fine, I'll take note of this. Okay, can go any further? And I said, no. I said, that's what I've got. And I feel I need clarification. And this happens with me a great deal. I will come out initially with an observation, and I need clarification that I'm right or I'm wrong. He rang me back. He went away and rang me back and said, Bob, you're totally wrong. I've just rung Scotland Yard information on the murder. No, no such device was found. You're talking rubbish, bum, bum, bum. And I said, no, I am not. And for the first time, I went out on a limb. I said, I am not wrong. The next day, got up, my telephone wasn't working, and panic, 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 and all of a sudden, telegram came. Bob, you must contact me, urgent. Went to a neighbor's phone and rang the guy. He said, I don't know what you've done, but you're right. I've just had the murder squad contact me, insisting that I tell them of my sources as to where I got the information. And two guys are coming on from the murder squad. You are a suspect. You were right. The information was never released.
And that means you're a suspect, which is, it was sort of the plot of about a half dozen kind of cheesy movies where the psychic becomes the suspect. How could they have known this information? And that's just where we'll pick it up coming up next. The story of The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective, Robert Cracknell. And then we'll talk about some of the biggest cases that helped make Bob's reputation coming up next hour before we get to your questions and comments on the way on Coast to Coast. And next week, that will be the supposed date of the apocalypse as predicted by Harold Camping and many more people who have invested their life savings into promoting his idea. And we're hoping, you know, maybe against hope, that we'll have somebody on from that organization to respond to whatever it is that happens a week from today, a week from tonight. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponet.